everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer, and I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. I'm Craig Campbell. I'm the owner of Nerdburger Games. I make tabletop role-playing games, and also now a card game on Kickstarter now, Slay to Win. Go find it. And I am here... Get this, Jess. How many times we've had this come up with other guests, but how many times do you think Brennan has been on the show? Brennan's our guest and we'll talk to him in just a moment, but I want Jess to guess and I'm going to have Brennan guess as well.
We were just talking about how this is our 150th episode. So I'm going to guess 9 episodes.
Okay. Brennan, welcome.
Yeah, hi Brennan, welcome.
Hello.
So I was so distracted by our conversation before we started recording. I didn't even introduce myself correctly. So Brennan, hi, welcome to the show again. We'll figure out how many times. How many times do you think you've been on?
I think maybe 6. That's my guess.
Okay. We're not gonna do Price is Right. Rules, but we are on, we've got a whole list that I have in a spreadsheet, and we start at the top and we go down the list and I try to schedule people. And sometimes we kind of jump around a little bit because people aren't available, and we've kind of gotten to the bottom of the list on the 6th time. And Brennan is the first person on the top of the list right now who is signed on for the 7th appearance.
Oh, no kidding. I was close.
Yeah.
Well, you're forgetting about the other 2 secret episodes I recorded with Brennan.
Oh.
That we weren't going to tell you about. I was just guessing a number. I'm really bad at guessing.
That's okay.
Brennan,
yeah.
Hello.
So 7 time.
Back.
Brennan, hello.
Hi.
Tell us about yourself. We've never met you before. So what is this intro? What is this opening? Hi.
I'm a game designer. I've done Bulldogs, Mortal Coil, and a variety of other little indie games. And I am working on one right now called Teenage Ninja Fighting School, which is a shonen anime game.
Love it. All right. And thank you for joining us again today. And we have I'm having a hard time getting into character right now as a podcast host. Oh gosh,
why are you
groaning? I don't understand. What's wrong? What are we talking about today, Craig?
Sure. We're gonna talk about getting into character when you're GMing. When GMing, you're going to certainly portray a number of NPCs at some time or another. I can't think of a game where you won't, but I suppose there's probably some out there. But a lot of times you're going to be portraying NPCs and finding a way to kind of get into that character to help distinguish them from each other, to give them a flavor that the players can latch on to. There's a lot of different things that you can do to do all of that. And as a disclaimer, we may get into some of like nitty gritty sort of stuff that maybe you as a GM don't do. Like, you may not speak in first person as your characters. You may simply describe in third person. That's fine. That's cool. If it keeps the game moving and everybody understands what's going on, we're great. But we're going to touch a little bit on probably a lot of first person kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'm glad that we're having this conversation because I have a reason why I would want to talk about it. But Brennan, why did you pick this topic?
Oh, it just seemed very interesting. And I'm also, I will admit, as a GM, I have historically been kind of bad at it. Distinguishing my NPCs from one another, but I have some tricks that I use now to help.
I love it. Okay, I'm so excited. I'm starting a campaign soon. I'm starting a new campaign. I'm running one. So I'm thinking about this actively right now, like all of the NPCs that I'm designing, how am I going to distinguish them? And how am I going to get into character? Because I like doing that at the table. I feel like I'm really good at doing it as a player. I really enjoy playing characters that are different from me. I was just told last night that somebody met me in a LARP and they thought I was mean, but then I was really nice as soon as the game was over. And I was like, yes, acting, it's role playing. but balancing it for like you said, Craig, like a lot of NPCs or even just a handful, how do we, how we get into it. So Brennan, let's share some tricks. Don't hold on us. What do you do?
I actually have a sheet of 1,000 different personality traits that I found somewhere online years ago. I can't actually point you at where it came from because I don't know, but I roll up two character attributes for every character and then try to use those as a guideline to distinguish them from other characters.
So you just like pick, when you do pick something from the list first and design an NPC around it, or do you pick?
Yeah, or if a random NPC shows up, I just add them in immediately. And
that's genius. I like that. I like that better than a list of like predefined NPCs, because you can kind of, because people sell those online, right? Like you can buy a PDF of here's 100 NPCs to add to your game. I like to make my own up. I'm going to steal that idea for sure.
Yeah, well, the reason that I use the 1,000 one is because the repeats are minimal, right? It's not going to show up again. So they don't seem too samey. And that's the same reason I use two attributes instead of just one to give them a little bit more of a unique flavor.
And those two attributes may kind of interact with each other to create kind of a unique kind of situation where you wouldn't necessarily get that combination of ideas together from any other combination.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you give us an example of like how you would do that from your list, if you have one off the top of your head?
I don't have one off the top of my head, but I can pull one up.
Pull the list up.
And you know, Brennan said he pulled this from the internet a long time ago. I am sure, because the internet contains multitudes, that there are lists akin to this somewhere that you can compile from a few different sources and just kind of throw them together. You know, you can find all these ideas.
Yeah. And I use this in Pendragon, where there's not a lot of information generally. I'm not generating up the traits for all of the characters. So it's good to have something to sort of characterize them. See if I can find it.
I'll edit that.
Sorry, this is taking me a minute.
It's okay. I'll edit this part out. So take your time to find it, because I think I would want to, I definitely want to hear this on the, let me leave a note for myself.
All right. I have my list. Okay. So for example, if I was just choosing two off the list, I would say maybe pretentious and frugal.
I can picture this person already in my head.
Exactly,
I know what this person looks like.
So yeah. So that it gives a lot of characterization to the character, you know, quickly, just having two of these attributes that then help me come up with a way to portray them when I'm, you know, interacting with the player characters.
And it's broad enough that could be a villain, that could be a helpful NPC, that could be a family member, that could be, you know, a servant type, that could be a town guard or a police officer or an executive or.
Yeah. I think.
And it when it's a family member and the traits are negative, it always creates some interesting.
That's so good. I mean, any trait could be negative too. Like,
exactly.
Like any trait could be positive. You could be frugal in a positive way. Pretentious in a positive way. I mean, maybe in an endearing fashion.
Right.
You pair that with a strong motivation for the scene or for the character, and like that's more fleshed out than some PCs are when they start a game.
That's true.
And it doesn't rely on doing an accent. It doesn't rely on, you know, doing some sort of an impression of somebody. Yeah. You might find yourself affecting the speech in a certain way. Like pretentious sounds like, you know, very, very easy to fall into enunciating and being very proper. But it doesn't you know, pigeonhole you into being like, oh, now I've got to do like, you know, I've got to do like Mr. Bean no, not Mr. Bean, but Rowan Atkinson from like the Blackadder series.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
he has his pretentious, you know, the way he talks to people. You don't have to necessarily do an impression of Blackadder. But you can be that. That's excellent.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up the accents, because I've done accents before, but it's been few and far between. Because I find them difficult and a little too stereotypical most of the time. Well, I was running a Star Wars Clone Wars game, and the only accents I did were the clones and the robots. So,
Oh, robot accent?
Yeah. You know, Roger, Roger.
Yeah.
I think accents, you could set accents aside, and if you want to do something, you know, with the speech pattern or the way the voice comes out, is you can look more at like colloquialisms and affectations of how the person speaks.
That's generally
like,
you what know, I would do.
Some people speak like they're asking a question all the time. some people will, you know, say things and then say yes, you know, to like try to get, like, they're testing to see if you agree with them all the time. Or they might be using certain colloquialisms overburdening their speech with colloquialisms too. So you could see, you know, just using little idioms and expressions like too much does set a character apart, just like it would set a person apart. If people are peppering their speech with, you know, things like a pound saved is, you know, or a penny saved, or what is it? A pound saved is a penny earned, or
penny saved,
know,
is a pound.
Bird in the hand, two in the bush, and all those, like, you could pepper those things in there and twist it for the game. Like, you could, you don't have to talk about birds, you could talk about some other thing, but there's a lot that you can do with how you are speaking, the speed at which you speak. I found that I happened upon this, and it just struck me all of a sudden. Go look for videos of what's his name now, he's an impressionist, he's a chubby guy, he's been doing impressions for years and years. He kind of became famous doing the Madden impression, John Madden impression. I'm blanking on his name here. Frank Caliendo. If you find videos of him, he likes to break down impressions. And you don't have to make the voice sound like, because he will talk about how, like, if you want to, like the one I saw most recently is like, if you want to do an impression of Robert Downey Jr., the way you do it, and this is just part of the breakdown, was like, you start out talking very slowly, and if you're going to list things, the first couple things are listed very slowly, and then you speed up very much at the end. And if you listen to Robert Downey Jr. as some of his characters, like in particular, Tony Stark, that's how he talks.
Yeah.
So he picks out these little affectations of how the person speaks that has nothing to do with sounding like his voice, like the timbre and pitch of his voice. But it's just these little affectations that he does all the time. And he breaks those down all the time. He talks about how he gets George W. Bush's face to do, he does the facial expressions of George W. Bush. He does his voice really well, as you know, really well, but it's like, you could just like purse, you know, just the way he purses his lips a little bit and he kind of crinkles his eyebrows. You can pick up that sort of stuff. He talks about it all the time. Now that I think about it, he discusses these with talk show hosts and stuff all the time, because he breaks down how he does his impressions.
You had mentioned too, like, the enunciation thing. One of the things that I'm doing with, okay, I have two campaigns that I'm about to start running. One of them, a lot of the NPCs are real people from history, from a very specific time in history. And it involves the Bell family of Alexander Graham Bell. They were all really big into speech and enunciation. So I was already thinking about how, like, I know that this person, enunciation and speaking clearly is very important for this person and this entire family. How am I going to include that into the character? And kind of like bring that to life in a sort of way. That enunciation or even mumbling is another thing. Like, mumblers. A lot of my students mumble. I could do a really good impression of one of them. those are all just like ways you can change your voice a little bit without having to worry about, like, oh my gosh, I can't do a Scottish accent. There's no way. Or I don't want to do an accent for whatever reason, that I'll change it. I will say, though, an accent can really do a good job of characterizing. I just watched Sinners, And they, like having, there was a very specific choice in the movie Sinners with there are two Chinese characters, two characters of Chinese descent. And they have the same accents as everybody else in the movie. And it really tells you already something about those characters. Like they are here in the society. They are part of what's going on and they've been here. And it really just like kind of showed that off. But that's, you know, those are professional actors, you know, they're professional actors being directed for a specific purpose. You are just a GM. Not that being a GM isn't important, but you don't have to throw out an Oscar worthy performance for each of your characters. Anyway, what are some other ways we can get the character?
I think, you know, what you touched on it briefly earlier, Craig, which is motivation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge way of getting into your character's head, your NPC's head, is knowing what they want. And when you know what they want, you are going to have more natural reactions and more natural ways of interacting with people that will drive them towards those goals. Now, what they want is often not what the PCs want, or completely tangential to what the PCs are trying to do. But knowing what your NPCs want, I think, is a huge part of being able to get into their character.
It's a joke amongst actors, and you see comedians talking about it, and everything's like, "What's my motivation?" Right. But that's true. Like, what is your character's motivation? That's like a very basic precept of creating an interesting character, and making them, you know, their own character and unique and kind of memorable, is knowing that what their motivation is. On attached to that, a corollary perhaps is knowing the things that they absolutely hate or don't want. Like, what are the things that they would push back against, that they would argue about? And you can, it all it takes is one. Like, you could be like, I've got this character who wants this particular thing, but if the PCs suggest teaming up with this other group, or you know, calling the local constabulary, or anything, like they have very strong feelings about that sort of thing, and they will not entertain that, and they will try to worm the conversation back into the thing that they do want, and then that reinforces the thing that they do want.
Yeah, I think too, the more motivations, both positive and negative, that a character has, the more fleshed out they become. You don't need to have I think every character should have a motivation. It's something I do when I make NPCs. I included it in Moonpunk specifically. Like, all the characters have to have an ethos, something that they will never break, something that cannot be challenged. It's something that they hold deeply inside, whether that is something really positive or something kind of crappy. And sometimes even villains have, like, they have a positive ethos. Like, they have this ethos, and they can be persuaded if they can be persuaded based off that ethos. And some of them are like, I'm the best and screw you, which is a little harder to break. But if you can figure out what that character's motivation is, it helps you as the GM react also. It kind of takes a little bit of the improv load off of you. You know what they would say yes to. You know what they would say no to. And the more, like I said, the more of those you have, the more fleshed out a character is. But a motivation could be simply like, oh, I just need this little character here. My motivation for this character is to sell you some milk. That's it. I want to sell you some milk. That's all I want to do. I'm a pretentious, frugal guy, and I'm trying to sell you a glass of milk. And that's a whole scene. And you can ride for a long time on that. And that's just a tiny little character. But if it's like a recurring character, you're going to need a little bit more than that. Motivations can also be like their connections to other characters. Like, I hate this person, I'm in love with this person, and this person's my sister. Those are all, they're kind of motivations, they're more connections. But it also helps you, like, again, get into that role and make those decisions on the fly, because unlike for you playing a PC, where like you just have this one person to control, you can act the way you want to. You are completely in control of them. You have to, you know, like, you have to balance all these other people, characters in your mind, and like that's hard to do in the moment without some pre-planning.
And knowing the NPC's ethos or motivation is, if you can bring that across in the interaction with the players, you're giving the players a gift, because now you're giving them a way to get what they want from that NPC.
Yeah.
Like this NPC is motivated to do this. Well, we will help you do that thing if you give us the, you know, key to the hidden treasure or whatever.
Yeah.
It's an automatic in for the players to actually have a direction without you having to tell them this is the direction to go. Like,
yeah.
Give them a way to interact, to manipulate, to befriend, to whatever.
Do you have a list of 1,000 motivations, Brennan?
I don't have a list of 1,000 motivations, but I do think that is where I was having trouble with characterizing NPCs for a long time, was that I was not fleshing them out enough in my mind as to what they wanted and what their personalities were. You know, I dig into it more now, but my NPCs were just very samey. You know what I mean? They all seemed very similar to each other. Especially ones that just sort of came up on the fly.
Yeah, it's especially like you, definitely. The ones on the fly are the ones I struggle with too. And sometimes it sucks because your players want, they really like those characters you came up with on the fly for whatever reason. And now, like, I have no idea who this person is. What am I going to do with them? Worse for me is making a recurring character and then forgetting how I portrayed them the last time we played.
Taking notes is essential.
Been there. especially tough when you make up of an NPC on the fly and assign that stuff in your head, and the players suddenly latch on to that NPC and want to constantly go back to them. You have to kind of keep that all in mind. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any tips on like taking notes? Like, how do you take notes on these characters when they come up? Like, I have my regular game notes, but that's usually about plot. the characters did.
One of the things I try to do when I'm running a game is do an after session summary within the next day or two, where I note down everything that happened so that I can keep all that in mind, because I am notoriously bad at remembering what happens from one session to the next without notes. So I take some notes while during play, but I try not to do too much of that because nobody wants to see me sitting there writing the whole time.
Yeah.
And so I find that doing a quick after session summary really helps. And then if I didn't flesh the NPC out enough in the session, I can do it then, you know. So
same here.
I'll try to make some notes for myself if I can quickly during the game. Well, like when the player's in the middle of kind of debating something or whatever, where they have this, the camera's pointed at them, I can make some notes. Otherwise afterwards, I've also learned not to be afraid of quickly scribbled handwriting. Like, if you got to make a note, you can make it really fast because you know your handwriting. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to decipher that later, even if it's a little scribbly, as long as you're not like, you know, drunk or high, you'll probably be able to figure it out.
Challenge accepted, because I've written some notes that I'm like, I don't know what I wrote. I don't know what I was doing.
Well, how sleepy were you at the time?
The normal like those
D&D
amount.
Notes memes.
Okay, well, okay, with a caveat, try it. If it doesn't work for you, if your scribble notes are just terrible, then don't use that as a method. But I've come to trust myself that, like, I can scribble something down very, very quickly, you know, 4 or 5 words, and then be like, I'll remember, you know, and I look at it, decipher it, you know, later, and I'm like, okay, I'm sure what those 3 words are, but now this sparks my head, and I know what I was trying to say there.
Yeah, I don't have that problem because I have very neat handwriting.
I can have neat handwriting, but when I'm like really just like rushing writing something down, especially if I'm not looking at it, sometimes I'm like, it's hieroglyphics. Who knows what I just put there?
You can't even figure it out. Yeah,
yeah. There have been a couple times.
My handwriting is garbage. Unless I really slow down, you know, consciously make an effort to slow down.
Was that drafting class in high school that got me?
Ooh. The draft, I did plenty of hand drafting, but I've now spent 25 years in the industry where everything's on the computer.
Right, yeah.
Because I do actually work in architecture where I, once upon a time, I had to write very clean block lettering.
Yeah.
I know that people who, some people, at least I've heard it from a couple different podcasts where they do actual plays, the GM goes back and gets little snippets every time they have a new character. They record a little bit of their voice and how they were acting. And then if they forget how to do it, they'll like play it really quickly, listen to it, and like, oh yeah, yeah, this person. And then they'll just like edit that out of their podcast. That's not, I mean, maybe that's something you might be able, I've never tried it. That might be something that you could do in your regular game too. I know some people record their regular game sessions just for their own notes. Mm-hmm. That might be something, or even just like, I have a quick recorder. Here's this new NPC. I know that they're going to come back. Let me just get this on the tape and let it roll. I think that would maybe really useful, especially if like you have a villain that appears in scene one and then they're not going to reappear until scene 10. you might want to know what they're like.
Here's a thought. If you are recording, and you know, many of us can just put our cell phone on the table and record, just for the sake of recording. It won't be great quality, but you'll be able to hear everything. Is you on your notepad, you could have like a little matrix, a little spreadsheet or whatever, where you'd be like, okay, I've got a little column for NPCs and a little column for plot and a little column for the characters. And then when something's happening where I'd be like, I need to remember this, just write the minute and second you're at.
Yeah.
There's an NPC bit at this minute and second. There's a plot bit that came up at this minute and second. And then you can go back to it.
That's what you do in journalism when you're recording something. Yep. Like you take notes, but you also have your recording going. You're just taking brief notes. They said this word, look for it here. Here it is.
Yep.
As you're going. And then your notes are just kind of like an outline. So you remember.
They're your index.
Yeah. I know some people use... I mean, you guys know my feelings on AI, but there are some like algorithms and digital helpers that can translate and transcribe your notes. I think that those are perfectly acceptable and useful, and that can also be useful for your games too. I would just be careful with what kind of programs you're using and how they're using your data.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you, Zoom, that we're using currently.
Jeez. another thing too, getting back to embodying your character. One of the things you can do to kind of get into character or to present the character is if there's a physicality to your character that you can convey, you can do that. You know, hunched back, favors one side. You know, if the character is slow and methodical, maybe when they're talking, you get up and slowly pace and walk. And draw the player's attention to you, walking the way that character would. If they're, you know, always kind of grumpy, you'll contort your face into a grump. If it's not already permanently that way as you get older, because that happens to some people like me.
That's like, I love doing that. It's really useful for me. That helps me get into character more than anything else, is literally holding my body a certain way. I mean, I think that probably comes a little bit from like being like, I did a little acting when I was younger and I love to LARP too. I think just having the physicality of it really can make your character different. I played a LARP recently, like a couple months, like a month or two ago, maybe 2 months ago, where the whole idea is that your character kind of changes suddenly at one point in the game. So having a different physicality, like I was kind of all slightly prepped for it. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen. I just knew that there were going to be some changes. So I was really thinking about my physicality. And then when I realized like, oh, I do actually have this other character that I have to like start that other character, but something happened in the game without spoiling the LARP that other people might play in the future. Changing the way I held myself to like show that personality switch was the number one way I was able to differentiate while not completely changing my character. Standing up straight, slouching, like you said, even like little like movements I'm doing it with my head right now. You don't have like a video on this, but movements you can do with your head, with your eyes, with your hand gestures, playing with your hair. Like there are so many little movements that can show your players, if you are doing a face-to-face or like video communication, show your players what this character is like, and also literally help you, like you said, Craig, embody the character.
And
My that's my favorite tip.
it doesn't need to be like stage play big either. It can be like a really subtle little thing. You can treat it like film. And if you don't think that that you can embody like a change in a character or a very specific thing about a character in a very, very small way, I say watch Superman 1 and Superman 2 with Christopher Reeves and watch every time Clark Kent becomes Superman or Superman becomes Clark Kent and how he changes his physicality ever so slightly. And it makes the character completely different. It does so much more than the glasses.
Yeah, this is, I think this is one area where I'm not great and could be better.
You don't, it doesn't need it. Like these are all little extra pizzazzes. You're already
Yeah, they
doing
are
the
extra
heavy
pizzazzes.
lifting.
It's stuff that I'd like to do, but I haven't traditionally done, so.
And to our listeners, that's you can just add them as you add them. Like you figure out how to embody, or how to bring this little trick into play now, and then we'll figure out how to bring that little trick into play 6 months from now, or I'll discover my own little trick a year from now. You just kind of slowly build that skill set.
What about other ways of finding our voice, embodying, maybe not necessarily for our role-playing characters, but as we're writing our game texts, how can we, because sometimes those can be a characters of their own, the voice of your game, the narrative voice of your game. I've seen some games that have been very, very successful at doing this. We're like, wow, this sounds like a character telling me about this game. And I don't know. I've always wanted to do something like that. And I'm curious what the two of you have to say about that from the game design perspective.
I've done it a touch, and I've thought like you, I've thought about like, well, what if I wrote this entire game like much more kind of in world, in game world or something like that? It's a fine line to walk. It can work very well. It can be too much. But I did like with Die Laughing, if you ever read the text of Die Laughing, it's not a terribly long book, but there's a snarkier sense of humor in there because I'm just kind of like poking at the idea of all the tropes you're toying with, and like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't even think I made a conscious choice with that game. I think I just started kind of putting kind of mildly snarky comments in there. But there's certainly things that you can do to interact. You can separate those two things. Like you might have this portion of the game book is like, this is matter of fact. It's going to be essentially an instruction manual. It's going to teach you about the world. It's going to teach you about the game mechanics, how you create a character, all that sort of thing. And then there might be portions that are like characters speaking, and having, I think, I don't know for sure how all of the more recent vampire games do it in vampire, vampire and other World of Darkness games do it. But I know like the first edition and everything, they had whole sections of just like, here's letters from one character to another in this world and setting. So that way, they could get the flavor of the game across, because, and they were also at the time trying to kind of do something that was very different in the gaming world. So they wanted to kind of really drive that point home, and it was all very, very story driven, the storyteller system actually. But then when you got to the rules, they were just like, straight up, here's how this goes. This is what you roll, and this is how it works. And so you can do that sort of thing in your game where you can literally break it up. And it doesn't even have to be big, long chapters of like in-person text. It can be little sidebars every so often. I'm going to be laying out Cosmic Corsairs in the coming weeks, and I know that I'm probably going to hit gaps where I'm going to be like, I want an even number of pages for this section, and I've suddenly got a half a page that I don't have filled. So do I write something to go in there that's kind of game material, or do I do like a little sidebar and have like, here's a discussion between two people on a starship? That's like set in the world and filled with some of the terminology and of the world. So there's those things to do. as well. I did do that in Capers. I did that exactly in Capers to pepper around to fill some gaps, because I had no idea how to lay stuff out, and we were finding little gaps all over the place, and I didn't want to just do spot art everywhere. And so what I did was I wrote a police interrogation of a witness to a crime committed by a caper from top to bottom. And then I gave it beats. I gave it like little story beats, like every six or seven sentences, there would be like a little moment. And then I broke that into little sidebars, and you have to find those sidebars. They're in a different color. You can find them very quickly if you flip through the book, but it tells a whole conversation, but each little snippet tells like one little part of the, of the interrogation where the police officer learns something.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've done stuff like that before, where I've put in little bits of in-character stuff in around the rules, but I haven't really changed the way I write the rules themselves. And I think I'm a little hesitant to do that, because I feel like clarity is more important than voice in rules, conveying rules. But I also have read some games where the rules were written in a voice, and it was pretty cool and fun. I'm not sure how those are to play, though, when you're looking stuff up.
Yeah. My own experience, and maybe because it's my favorite game of all time, but the original Deadlands is written like that. There's a lot of rules discussion where they're saying, okay, so now you're going to roll. Now you're, Y-E-R, gonna, G-O-N-N-A, roll. Yeah. Whatever dice. And so they're kind of talking in old timey prospector speak with some colloquialisms and, certain contractions and things. And it's, like I said, it's a fine line. I think for that game, it works well.
Mm-hmm.
There's another game that I think the various iterations of Paranoia does a very good job of conveying everything in game term, conveying game and flavor all together in a game, because it's the computer is constantly the computer that controls basically your whole world is talking to you, and your computer wants you to be happy, and the computer is very, very demanding, but very, very polite. And it gets that whole point across while still kind of teaching you the game.
Yeah. No, I've seen it done successfully, I think.
Yep. It's but it has to be, I think it needs to be a conscious effort, and you need to always be cognizant of it and always kind of go back. Mm-hmm. And it's probably worth being a special point of playtesting, for having people do read throughs and making sure that they didn't get distracted or confused by the in-world speak.
I think too, like, you could take one of the same tips from voicing a GM or voicing an NPC as a GM, getting into character there, like where you can think about somebody that you're trying to emulate and listen to their voice and watch them, kind of like your example with Robert Downey Jr. You could do the same thing with, like, if you have a specific voice you want to get across in your rules text, reading a book or listening to an audiobook in a similar style that you wanted to get, or even playing a video game with a similar style that has a narrator, or like other characters that are voicing it. I think those, getting some examples and having that voice in your head while you're writing, can make that more successful. So if you want to do something like that's funny and irreverent, Douglas Adams style, go reread Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and then write. You're going to find that voice is a little bit more present in your head, and it's going to be easier to write. I think it's totally possible, and we've just given several examples. It's totally possible to write rules text in a voice. You just, like you said, you just can't go too wild with it. At the end of the day, it is a manual. It is a manual of rules that they need to follow. But there's plenty of people who give instruction with a specific voice. I mean,
yes.
They're
watching
a how-to video with somebody that you find, like cooking videos. Like, people do things in voice all the time, giving clear instruction and emulating that and learning tricks from them can be very useful for your writing, if that's something you choose to do. I think you have to be a really good writer to do it, though. You have to be like really strong in your writing.
I think if you weren't trying to do it and it doesn't come across as pretentious or cheesy, you've got to be a good writer.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah, it definitely can't come across as pretentious and cheesy. People can sniff that out a mile away. Yeah. I would definitely be like, oh my gosh, what is this person doing? If I read something like that, I can, I don't have any specific examples in mind, but I could certainly see myself like rolling my eyes and putting a game book down because I think it's being pretentious and frugal.
Yeah, pretentious and frugal.
But you can also, you know, maybe spend some time, you know, maybe you're doing games where you're not doing that sort of thing, and games and other products and supplements or whatever, freelancing for others. And then, but you're honing your writing style and getting it to, you know, just, you know, paying attention to what you're reading when you're reading other games, paying it, you know, thinking about what you're writing, how you're writing it, reviewing it, editing it yourself before, you know, it goes to like somebody else for editing. And then, you know, eventually perhaps if all goes well, get there to the point where it's like, okay, I feel like I'm strong enough with like being able to mesh this other thing into my writing. That's, that could be, you know, could, if I'm not careful, threaten to cause problems and make it confusing or something.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I mean, you can, you also sometimes have to be aware that your voice is coming out too strongly when you are doing freelance work for people though. Like what I've written adventure for people before, they go in a book. You want to make sure that it's kind of matching consistently tone wise. If you have a really strong writer's voice yourself, gotta watch out for that. And then on the flip side of that too, you can also hire, if you have the resources, you can hire people who can go through your, like, oh, you've written your text now, you want it to sound this way, and they can enhance it that way. Mm-hmm. A question I ask when I edit people's work is like, okay, what do you want this to sound like? Do you want it to sound matter of fact? Do you want it to sound quippy and funny? How off, like, where do you want this line to be? And an editor's job, if you are hiring one, is to make sure that that is coming across successfully. And little things you can change, even just like small subtle things like the kinds of words you use while you're describing things, or asides, or like where you are placing those sidebar texts, which can be so important to characterization. And like, even if it is not written in an NPC voice or like a really strong voice, little tiny things can change the tone altogether. There's all sorts of little subtle things. Again, you have to be kind of a good writer and a good editor to really be successful with that. And I know it's really, it does kind of suck. Like if you're writing a book and so much of it is rules text and you can feel like, oh my gosh, this is boring and it's not exciting and I want to zhuzh it up. The temptation is there. Just, I don't know, get another eye on it. Get an editor or get another set of eyes on it.
One of the things to be wary of, depending on how you want your book to be received, what kind of audience you're looking for, if you are going to insert more like real world sort of stuff, is being careful about using idioms and expressions that are common to a particular country or particular language speakers within a particular country, because you can kind of lose people if you use terminology, if you use expressions that aren't known by people from a country outside of the one you live in and grew up in. That's something that I've become more and more cognizant of myself too, just when I'm hiring freelancers or communicating with printers in a different country. I try to make sure, because I tend to get a little colloquial in how I talk. And I make sure that, like, oh, I just used the term the whole enchilada. You know, right. That might not mean something to somebody that I'm trying to write to. It was in a nutshell. That was the one that came up too. I was going to go, and that's the blah, blah, blah in a nutshell. And I'm like, and it suddenly struck me. I'm writing to somebody from another country. I'm like, I don't know. They may, but I don't want to risk losing them. So yeah. I'll rephrase that. And that's, again, this is applicable to in kind of in-world stuff. If you use it and it's clear from context, you're fine. That was one of the things that the original Planescape setting for D&D did back in, second edition, where it was written using Planescape slang. So it was all weird words. There wasn't a lot of them, but there was a glossary at the back, but there was weird words, but they weren't co-opted from another language. They were just weird words. And you figured out what the book was talking about in context, because it would refer to a person as a Berk, B-E-R-K, and you would figure out what they were referring to just because of what the game was talking about at that moment.
Yeah.
And so that sort of thing can happen too, but then it also becomes something you have to keep consistent. You have to think of yourself, and the editor has to be brought up to speed of, you know, the same way you give them a list of these words must be capitalized when they are game terms, you give them a list of these are in-game made up language words or slang words or whatever. Just so you know, that was not a misspelling.
Yeah.
Right.
Then your spell checker catches it and it tries to autocorrect it.
I meant Burke, not jerk.
Yes.
Any other tips that we have for finding our voice as a writer?
I'm not sure I have a lot of tips on that area, honestly.
I think we've talked a little bit about like speaking in the voice of the world, but you can also speak in the voice of the theme of the game. Mm. Like if you're making a game that's all about characters who are building community, you know, speaking as, you know, using words that invite people, talking about words that are building and growing, and like you're the ideas of what the game is about gets embodied in how you're constructing sentences, and how you're, engaging the reader. So like if you're making a game that's really gritty and dirty, your language might be really plain, matter of fact, like never talks about like when the character passes away. No, when the character bites it, you know, like that's the terminology you're going to use, because this is a gritty game where characters are going to die and I'm not going to apologize for that, says the game book. And then you speak to it that way, because that gives the reader a sense of like, oh, this is a game where death is coming and the game does not care.
I mean, you also get a lot of support from the actual graphic design of your game too, about what is supporting the voice of the game. So you get a little bit of extra. you can use the font and everything. So,
the whole package conveys a tone.
There are times I've been tempted to steal the Stephen King thing that he does, where he changes, like he narrows the paragraph and often changes the font to like italics whenever it's like going on. Like, and it depends on the book, different books do it different way, but like for one, it might be, these are the thoughts going on inside the person's mind. So you make a visual change that's conveying something else. So like you're saying this in do a sidebar or narrow the paragraph or change the font or whatever. And you could be like, you know, establish a rhythm of this is where I'm speaking more to get you to understand the theme because it's written this way or presented this way in the book. And so there can be visual cues.
Yeah.
I could have just said there could be visual cues. That would have been the whole section, but I like to talk. So I kept talking. I'm continuing to talk about how much I like talking.
Loquacious and thinking of another personality trait. I can't think of one off the top of my head that would match.
Self-aware.
Brandon, do you have any final thoughts for us today before we wrap up this episode?
I do think it is important for you to find your voice as a writer in general, and not just be mimicking other people's tones and writing. So that's definitely something that you can work on as you are developing a game, is figuring out exactly how you want to come across on the page.
And if your games tend to be kind of like, you don't do in-world stuff, but you do game, you write your games in such a way that they convey a certain tone, like a certain level of intimacy or friendliness or presentation, like that will also kind of translate. People will start to get that impression of you as a person based on what you're writing stuff. To keep that in mind too, that people may formulate their first impression of you from that. Just like people hear somebody on the radio and then meet them in person and it's, oh, this is a, this is a different person. Like this, you look nothing like your voice sounds.
I look exactly like my voice sounds. So if you ever meet me in real life,
she does. You totally do. I'm sorry.
I know. I know. I wasn't being facetious. Well, I think we've given a lot of great pointers. I also have taken some notes for myself for my upcoming campaigns about how I'm going to embody my NPCs. I got some good ideas. Woo! Yeah, I'm ready to rock some of that stuff out and apply some of these tips. So thank you guys for all of that. Brennan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, thank you.
Always
thank
a pleasure.
Yeah, where can we find you and your stuff?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Brennan R. Taylor and on Facebook too if you want to go there.
Can't believe people are coming back to Facebook.
Yeah.
You can find me at wannabegames.com or at Joska on Blue Sky and Discord now too. I mean, I've been on Discord for a while under the same name if you wanted to chat me up there. And Itch Interactive RPG under Wannabe Games.
And you can find my stuff at the website nerdburgergames.com. I am at Nerdburger Craig on various social media, and the games are on DriveThruRPG. But there's a game that's not made just yet, and you can go help make that. It's called Slay to Win. It's sort of a hybrid monster hunting card game crossed with a light role-playing game because you integrate a story into your monster hunts. And you have a reason for hunting, which is to be the greatest monster hunter ever.
Thank you to our opening closing theme song, which is Avil by Steph Sachs, licensed under Creative Commons. Thank you, Steph Sachs. And thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.